And good afternoon, everybody. I'm Auriel Miller, Director of the IWA. Thank you very much indeed for joining us this afternoon. Do please say hello to each other in the chat. Use speaker view so you can see very clearly who's got the floor. The hashtag for the whole series of media summit sessions that we're carrying out this week and next week is hashtag IWA Media. And in fact, that hashtag goes back to all of our IWA work, so on the media. So it's quite a good treasure trove for those of you who are joining us for the first time. For those of you who don't know us already, the IWA is Wales's leading independent think tank with a long track record of shaping debates and influencing change in Wales through policy research and advocacy through our online and print publications. And I'm going to show you a copy of our latest magazine, The Welsh Agenda. Okay, this is the winter edition with an education special. And we provide platforms for robust comment and debate, as well as our agenda setting events. We're a membership organisation with members right across the country and far further afield. And it's great to see lots of members joining us today too. We're funded by our members, the events that we run ourselves and independent trusts and foundations. We are independent of government and of political parties. This is the third in a series of four events in our IWA Cardiff Media Summit 2021 series. We're going to be looking at news in Wales, who creates it, who reports it, and who we can trust to provide our factual reporting. You'll be able to catch up on our previous events on our 2020 media audit and on skills for our future screen work via our website and podcast channels very soon. There's also still time to sign up for our fourth and final event next Thursday, the 21st of January, which will focus on S4C and its strategic vision for its future. We'll put the link in the chat now. As I've said in both sessions so far, a healthy media in any nation means focusing on three things. First, our facts. We need news in Wales to help inform people and let them make their own minds up about the decisions and actions of those in power, particularly in our devolved parliament and government. Second, our fictions. The representation of Wales and its communities in all their diversity needs to improve. We don't see our stories told on screen, and this shapes how we understand ourselves, our past, present and future. The stronger and more rooted our creative sectors become, the more likely it is that those productions will come to exist. Third, our rules. Media regulation was designed for a different time. The powerful entities we need to regulate today simply didn't exist when the legislation was drawn up. This means it's often not quite clear what rules, if any, have been broken, or indeed who could even enforce them. Underpinning all three of these things is the need to invest in media skills and supply chains. Wales needs a cohesive strategy for future skills in the media sector, and we talked about that yesterday. Today's event, however, is about news. The very clear tension between having a weak media in a nation with a devolved government was, in many ways, the foundational problem that inspired the IWA to undertake our first Wales media audit in 2008. Then updated in 2015, and now again in 2020. The latest report will be available very soon, but in short, it shows that there has not been the progress we'd want to see in the quantity and quality of news available to people in Wales. The central issue remains the same. Wales, as any nation, needs good quality journalism and news as an essential pillar of its democracy. But the character of the problem has changed. The growth of social media as a source of news and the global trends in how news is paid for and therefore resourced has created a different set of problems. In 2015, we named the problem as a market failure. Trusted independent news sources in print or elsewhere couldn't make enough money to carry on. Now, the online news marketplace is characterized by atomization. Quite simply, you can now go looking for news which tells you what you want to hear and which presents it as fact. And even if you don't go looking for it, friendly algorithms will present you with whatever content stops us switching tabs. We know that this gradually tempts some users in the direction of ever more radical and radicalizing content. This can culminate in the shocking scenes we witnessed in Washington only last week. We used to say democracy dies in darkness. But today, the shared truths that we need to underpin democracy are in danger of being obscured by the combined glare of millions of glowing screens showing millions of different opinions. Journalism should guide us as best it can to those truths so that we can form our own opinions. Social media giants argue they are platforms, not publishers. They are clearly channels, but should they be filters? How we preserve the freedom of speech and the freedom of the fourth estate in the face of deliberate misinformation and disinformation is a problem we will not solve today, and which Wales clearly cannot solve alone. But we clearly need to do more. Today, we will, of course, talk about the problem and, again, of course, the challenges that COVID has brought to us all this last year. But what we most want to focus on is the future. We know we need to do more, but what does that mean? We at the IWA believe the time is right for a conversation about the Welsh Government taking a more direct role in ensuring news for Wales, with a focus on quality and on delivering news's civic role, not just quantity. We think there should be a contestable fund for local news, whether online, in print, or on the air, to bolster a vital pillar of our democracy, which the market clearly no longer supports. We recognise the risks and challenges of a government directly supporting news, but we believe the time has come for a conversation about how this can be done in a way which preserves the media's independence. So we'll return to this later in our discussion. Our media audits are primarily about bringing together data, and that data shows us the step change that we needed has not happened. But it would be quite wrong of us to assume that data is telling us the whole story. So I'm really delighted that our panel today brings together four people who have all been working, to their great credit, incredibly hard to create and promote news for the people of Wales. Progress has clearly been made, which cannot and should not be measured solely in hours of content created and consumed. So I'm very delighted to introduce our panel. We have Emma Meese, Director of Independent Community News Network, ICNN, and Centre for Community Journalism at Cardiff University. Welcome, Emma. Emma set up and manages the Centre for Community Journalism and the ICNN. Emma's passionate about giving community journalists access to the highest standard of training in digital and social media. She works with news publishers, academics, governments, charities and businesses worldwide with the aim of strengthening and sustaining the community news sector. Geraint Evans, who is News and Current Affairs Commissioner at S4C, welcome, Croeso, Geraint. Geraint's the Commissioner of News and Current Affairs, was previously a journalist at ITV Wales for 25 years, initially a reporter on the Current Affairs series Abida Bedwar before he became series editor and then editor of Welsh language programmes. Since joining S4C, he's been overseeing the rebranding of the daily news programme Newyddion S4C and the move obviously to a new set at BBC's Assembly Square and relaunched the topical discussion series Pybafan and now developing S4C's own digital news service. So we look forward to hearing more about that too. Dr. Ivan Morgan-Jones, founder and editor of Nation.Cymru. Ivan is also, I don't know how you find time for all of this, Ivan. Ivan's a journalism BA course leader at Bangor University, as well as the founder and editor of the news website Nation.Cymru. In 2020, he won a Wales Book of the Year and People's Choice Award for his novel Babel, and has published three other novels too. He's also been the editor of Golwg 360 and deputy editor of Golwg magazine. Welcome, Croeso, Ivan. Sian Pawg, chief executive of Golwg. Sian's been the chief exec since 2019, and she's appointed a new editor for the flagship magazine and Golwg 360. Golwg 360 has also relaunched its website, and the magazine is also available for the first time through Golwg Plus. Just a couple of practicalities, please, before we carry on. We are at the IWA, the team will be monitoring the chat room and the Q&A function on Zoom to pass your questions through to me. We really encourage you to use the chat room throughout to talk to each other, and I can see that that's going strong already. And I'm also going to ask you in our audience, please, to do some work. In the chat, can you please complete the sentence, to support news in Wales, the next Welsh Government should... We'll just post that into the chat room now, and we'll then share your ideas with the panel for their comments. There's also a DuPoll link for you to feed in your thoughts more broadly about the whole series of events and what decision makers in Wales should be prioritising in 2021 and beyond. Okay, so I think that is the admin and housekeeping done too. Let's get into the question, shall we, panel? So These days, it seems like every conversation must start with COVID. We've seen the divergence of political priorities leading to different rules in the four nations over the last 10 months. And this has crystallised the issue of why news that gets devolution is so important, particularly on UK-wide broadcasts. I've got three starter questions for each of you, please. So let's see how we manage this together. Firstly, can you tell us about what the immediate impact of COVID was on you and your members in terms of news provision? Secondly, has anything good come out of how you learned and adapted during the pandemic? What do we want to keep hold of? And then thirdly, what did COVID teach us about the resilience of Wales's media? So don't worry if you can't remember all three of those. I'll remind you as we go along. Geraint, can I come to you first, please, and then Sian?
Yeah, diolch fawr iawn, Penonda. COVID changed so much, of course, about the way that we all work. We're most of us working and spending a lot of time at home. And whilst for all of us, you know, some of that has been okay and manageable, for lots of us, we did need to attend newsrooms and so on. In TV terms, we needed to output programmes on air. And the demand for news and current affairs during this period, of course, increased significantly, whilst our ability to deliver that content was obviously challenged. Usual stuff we've all faced, you know, working from home, staff isolating, caring for kids, and limited numbers coming into the newsrooms. But the consumption of news during this period has been significant. We just moved, as it happens, newyddion S4C into a new 7:30 p.m. slot from 9 p.m., which was in itself, you know, a big step, and obviously did cause us some concern around the COVID time, coinciding as it did with that. But viewing figures were suddenly 50% higher than previously, partly down to change of slot, no doubt, but a lot of it obviously down to COVID. And for us as a national broadcaster, it's not just, of course, about news, but about current affairs as well. And due to the limited ability of crews to go out shooting half our current affairs programmes, we brought a Bidar Bedwar and a Bidnele into the studio for the first time so that they could record or transmit live on the day of TX so that we could actually be challenging and holding Welsh Government ministers to account. We were also, during this time, in the process of relaunching our topical discussion programme, Pawe Farn, our very own question time. And initially, we decided to delay it, as clearly it's designed for audience participation. But then the need for people to have a voice, of course, was obviously vitally important at this time. So we did launch it from the Tinopolis studio in Llanelli, with limited contributors in studio and others joining on Zoom. And then if that wasn't all enough, in the months prior to COVID, we'd already been developing plans at S4C to launch our own digital news service and a promise by myself to deliver. And COVID simply accelerated the need really for change on so many levels. We were already aware that for a PSB like S4C, developing a digital news service was essential. We had a daily news programme being made by the BBC, delivering a good audience, but our research was telling us that 87% of the programme's viewers were over 65 years old, and it did really beg the question as to where everybody else was getting their news from. If they're like most of us, they're not getting it from a morning newspaper or even an evening TV news programme, but from digital media. And with this increasing migration to digital, it was clear for us that to remain relevant as a broadcaster, we had to develop our own digital news service and really put our foot on the gas, really, to get that going as soon as possible. There was also this thirst for facts, for breaking news and data as it was released, not at 6 p.m. or at 7:30 p.m. when you sit down to watch your news. And there was clearly a need to counter that misinformation that was out there on social media regarding COVID, and also to communicate COVID regulations for Wales, as people were consistently getting what some would feel were confused and different messages from Downing Street and Cattaeus Park. So what we did was we immediately employed two journalists, which was quite a step for us at S4C. We have our news coming from the BBC, our current affairs from ITV, and we hadn't previously been creating our own journalism. But we employed two journalists immediately to cover stories arising from the Welsh Government Daily News Conference, to repackage content from newyddion S4C for digital platforms. And they did some data journalism, looking at the stuff coming out from the ONS and Public Health Wales updates. And we began live streaming the Welsh Government News Conference on our newyddion S4C Facebook page. And that was really key because we saw three key things in doing that. We could see that the reach for our content on Facebook was really hitting that target demographic that we'd set ourselves of the 35 to 55 age group. And most of the people consuming the content were in that category. And they were the exact people that weren't watching our news content on TV. Secondly, we could see there was a great deal of engagement with our content, with very often a bilingual debate happening in the comment section of our Facebook Live content. And then thirdly, the viewing data, looking back now, year on year, since we started creating more content on Facebook, has increased significantly, with the number of views increasing by over 300%, and the number of minutes viewed by a remarkable 600% year on year. So all in all, whilst COVID clearly brought its huge challenges, it did bring huge opportunities as well for us. And if there's one good thing that's come out of COVID, it is the fact that the Welsh population are far more aware now that they have their own Prif Weinidog, their own Prime Minister or First Minister, and they now know who Mark Drakeford is. And we used to hear so much about apathy with regards to politics and news in Wales. I don't think we'll be hearing so much about apathy about news over the coming months.
We'll wait and see, won't we, when we look at turnout for the Senate elections in, hopefully, fingers crossed, May. Thank you, Geraint. Sean, could I come to you, please? So the immediate impact of COVID on Golwg and what was good that came out of that and how you learned and adapted, and also what you think it's taught you about the resilience of Welsh media.
Well, yeah, the initial impact for us, just in terms of the practicalities, like everyone else, the working from home. But for us, the practicality of distributing a weekly print magazine. When we first went into lockdown, we weren't entirely sure whether we were going to be able to produce and distribute a weekly print magazine as normal. Through the hard work and the resilience of the team, we've actually managed, and the printers as well, that we've actually managed to not miss an issue, and we've published our issue as normal. But we also launched a new product, which in essence we were always going to do at some point this year, but we hurried it in at the beginning of lockdown. We launched a digital version of our prints magazine, Golwg. It was always the plan, but it was sped up in order to reach those customers who maybe couldn't go to the shop to buy their usual copy of the magazine. So that's been a positive. And I think we've been able to show that we're able to work under pressure. And sometimes having that stark deadline is actually a good thing. It means that you launch things a bit earlier than you'd managed thought of doing, but it's worked out really well. We've managed to reach a new audience as well with the magazine. I think we've reached an audience that's ordinarily would buy the print magazine, but we've also reached a new audience with our content. And then there's the financial implications for us as well. Being an independent business, we've lost revenue through sales, but also through lost advertising revenue. And I think we'll continue to see that impact for a while. For us, in terms of the positives, In addition to being able to recognise the resilience and our ability to adapt, I think, like most workplaces, I think it's been, like Derek was saying, the importance of journalism and the engagement with the content and reaching new audiences, and the importance of independent journalism in Wales, and for us, the importance of Welsh language independent journalism. I think it's important always to note that Welsh language shouldn't be squeezed out of this debate or seen as an add-on to the English language journalism. Pluralism needs to be in both Welsh and English, and I think we've managed to reach a new audience through greater engagement and realisation or recognition of the differences between the nations across the UK, and I think that's been a positive for us, and I hope looking forward that we're able to continue to build on that audience and carry that audience with us into a post-COVID world.
There will be a post-COVID world. We all have to hang on to that, don't we, particularly at the moment. And I think there's a couple of things I wanted to pick up and just sort of chuck into the next, into that context, Ivan and Emma, before I come to you with that. One is around obviously necessity being the mother of invention. I think you've made that point very, very clearly. But also that if nothing else, COVID has made sure that people understand that rules apply differently, different rules apply in different places, and devolution has cut through in a totally new way to everybody in Wales in a way that the last 20 years haven't. Ivan, you're busier than ever at nation.cymru, aren't you? What was the immediate impact of COVID on you and that particular service that you provide? And tell us about the good stuff and what you think that means around the resilience of Wales's media, please.
Well, in terms of coronavirus, there was, of course, an immediate negative impact in that being a university lecturer, my workload in terms of administration and online teaching quickly exploded to fill up the majority of my day, and that meant less time to spend on my journalism pursuits. But I think as Geraint mentioned, it and as happened with S4C, I think it's changed the society in two ways, which is first off, we had a huge influx of visitors to the site. I think the number of visitors went up from around 250,000 a month to 500,000 a month straight away, and has continued to increase since then. So I think we've seen a huge increase in appetite for Welsh news that perhaps wasn't there before. And those visitors have stuck around and aren't just reading our COVID-related material, but also reading other stories about Welsh news. Mm-hmm. And Welsh politics as well. I think part of that perhaps is the influence of social media. I think a lot of people have joined up to sort of groups on Welsh politics and Welsh news about coronavirus to get the latest information about these topics because of the COVID pandemic. But they're sort of sticking around and seeing news about other Welsh news and Welsh current affairs related topics as well. Including other sites and including our site as well. And I think it's changed the nature of the site a little bit as well, where perhaps before we were a little bit more focused on kind of filling the gaps in the coverage, where because we had this huge influx of readers, perhaps we felt an additional duty to provide more news in order to satisfy that increased desire for content. And as part of that, we've taken on an additional part-time editor, in addition to myself, who, you know, to an extent was doing a job as a one-man band in terms of publishing the majority of the content. That has been allowed in financially, really, by this extra influence of visitors seeing our ads, increased interest in the site, and more people choosing to subscribe to our site as well, because of this increased influx of visitors as well. And I think our number of subscribers has doubled over the course of the pandemic alongside the number of visitors to the site. So in terms of what we've learned over the past year, the positives and negatives, I think in terms of the positives, I think the first 3 years, Nation really sort of carved out a niche for ourselves as a kind of national English language news site. I think one question perhaps we had at the back of our minds was whether there was a ceiling to that, you know, how much sort of general call across the population was there for national Welsh news, or were we just sort of preaching to the kind of, you know, the 10-50% who have an interest in these kinds of topics anyway. And I think the last years has answered that with a no, really, there is a great deal of desire for national Welsh news out there, as long, of course, as it's something that has a sufficient impact on people's lives and they're aware that it has a sufficient impact on their lives. And I think that it's a shame that it's taken a pandemic which has killed so many people to do it. But one side effect of the coronavirus pandemic is that there's an awareness of devolution that wasn't there before. And I think that has had a knock-on effect on support for devolution and probably opposition to devolution, as well as people who perhaps didn't realise that we had all these powers in Wales, in Cardiff Bay, suddenly become aware of that fact. So we've seen a big influx of readers. What's particularly interesting is reading the comments on Facebook and other social media, and seeing how people perhaps weren't aware of devolution feel about this. And some very thankful that we do have this kind of what they see as a kind of shield or an extra layer of protection over Wales, and others who are sort of surprised and perhaps disappointed to know that we aren't sort of following the lead of the UK government in London as well. So I think it's the whole point of starting a Nation in the Cymru was really to have a kind of national conversation about these issues. And I think that we started the site at the right time, because I think the coronavirus pandemic has really facilitated that kind of conversation, which I think is going to continue again for years to come. In terms of the impact on Welsh media more broadly, I think it has really highlighted the fact that there are weaknesses there. I think perhaps it's woken a lot of people up to some of those weaknesses. Perhaps some people in political institutions, they didn't really have much to gain in the past from having that media scrutiny on them. But I think it's woken many of them up perhaps to the fact that when they need to get their own message out there, it can't just be drowned out by British media, which doesn't, as a general rule, pay much attention to what they have to say. So I think it's woken a lot of people up to the need for a stronger Welsh media than exists today. And I think, you know, that's something we're going to discuss in a bit more detail later on. I think it's I think the Welsh media has actually done better than I expected to a certain extent, because I did kind of speculate when the pandemic started that the Welsh government were going to be drowned out completely by the UK government and UK media and weren't going to be able to get their message across. But I think what we've seen is the media kind of scale up organically in order to square up to the size of the crisis, in terms of the BBC putting on much more press officers, Nation.Cymru taking on more staff and putting it in more of a shift on news articles. So I think in the digital age, I think the media can kind of adapt very quickly in order to meet an additional need for information. But obviously, I think the capacity to do that within the Welsh media is limited by a lack of funds. And I think it has shown the need to significantly strengthen and increase the size of the media, in particular the journalism media in Wales.
Thank you very much indeed, Ivan. There's loads there we're going to come back to, I think, during the conversation. Emma, one of the things that came out of what Ivan was just saying then was the importance of local as well, and place being so important, because at different times the rules have been different for each of us, depending on where we've lived within Wales, as well as whether it was Wales or England or Scotland or Northern Ireland. You know, so your role in terms of ICNN has really come to the fore. So could you talk us through what that's meant for you, please? Same questions.
Yeah, absolutely. So the really good thing, as I've jumped straight to question two, the really good thing that's come out of the pandemic is, as everybody else has said, is the appetite that people have realised the value of local news, but not just local in terms of, you know, even county. I mean, what people wanted to know is, I'm in lockdown. If I leave my front door, is my doctor's surgery open? The swimming pool's been closed. When's it reopening? How far can I exercise? Am I allowed to drive to my local park? Do I need, because there's a hill between us, am I going to get stopped by police? Which supermarket's safe? Is anybody, you know, addressing social distancing better in one supermarket than another? Where am I going to go? How do I collect my prescriptions? These are questions that people want to know. What's happening on my doorstep? It's never, ever been more important for people to know. And it really was down to me, my health, my family. And that's what it comes down to, is public health at the end of it. And people realise the importance of having somebody that is trusted, that gives you good quality, reputable news and information. So it's not just about, I heard something on Facebook. So they've been seeking out their local independent news titles. So we found right across the UK, so we represent 128 independent news publishers across the UK. And every member of ICNN has to pass a stringent entry test before it becomes become a member, and that then kind of gives them a quality kite mark as being a quality and trusted and reputable news publication. And we did this so that our members could partner with the BBC on the BBC's Local Democracy Reporter Scheme and various other schemes as well. So Welsh Government recognised that by partnering with members of the Independent Community News Network, particularly in Wales, that they are then partnering with quality and reputable news publishers. And that's something that we've lost for a long time, is the words quality, reputable, when you talk about journalists. For a long time, we've been up there with estate agents and people kind of go, bloody journalists. But what this pandemic has done is kind of really changed the role of journalism. And what we saw right at the very beginning was that they were awarded, all journalists were awarded key worker status. So, you know, providing a public service, but they're not publicly funded. So what we found with small independent news publishers is that the increase in the demand, exactly same as Ivan was saying, and Shana Geraint, the demand for their services skyrocketed. So we kind of saw this trajectory where, web traffic started here, increased. So majority of our members have doubled, if not trebled, their web traffic. Along with that comes increased costs, because you then have to have extra bandwidth and extra server costs. It actually costs more money. However, at the same time, the smaller the news publication, they tend to deal with smaller local businesses. And they're the ones that withdrew their advertising first. So while the demand on their services went like this, their income kind of went down like that, and their income dropped off the edge of a cliff. And what we really saw and what it highlighted is the inconsistency and the unlevel playing field that we still have in journalism. And this is something, I've been working at Cardiff University in community journalism now for nearly 9 years. And we are still working towards getting a level playing field, because everybody, I sit on the UK government ministerial roundtables where you've got the NMA and everybody else all kind of saying, woe is us, what can we do? And everybody was shouting, and usually the louder you shout, the first you get heard. And what it's really highlighted is things like there are some funding opportunities that are awarded to traditional legacy media that are not awarded to newcomers, such as independent journalists. So access to statutory notices is one key one. So they've had a majority of the larger titles of all had access in Wales and in England have had access to the UK government's ad campaign. So they launched the Hands Face Space campaign, and in its wisdom, they were partnering with OmniGov, who's the government's media buying arm, a partner. And they decided, now I was sitting, I couldn't get my head around it. I'm sitting in these ministerial roundtables, and you've got the NMA and Henry Ford Walker from News Quest and all the others kind of saying, this is impossible for us. What we are finding is that we cannot get our print titles out to readers because everything is shut. We're all in lockdown. So unless somebody goes to the supermarket, and they would normally buy in the supermarket, they can't access it. Most local authorities across the UK put a ban on paper boys and paper girls delivering initially because they didn't know the impact on public health of handling letterboxes and handling the papers and everything else. So they could not get their newspapers out yet. In their wisdom, OmniGov decided that the public health campaign, the Hands Face Space campaign, was going to go in daily and weekly printed titles. So we are seeing huge increases, just vast numbers. Our members reach over 5 million unique readers monthly, and yet couldn't access any of this government ad spend. So, and then in subsequent meetings, I'm hearing all these companies saying, how amazing this government ad spend was, that it was only second to the furlough scheme, whereas actually the small independents, who were the ones who are in the communities, reporting on the communities they serve, the ones that are doing the, it's back to old fashioned journalism. It's living and breathing, working on the patch that you report on. It's the work I did for the Carmarthen Journal 25 years ago, before we had Google, before I had a mobile phone. The tools of my trade were my notepad, my pen and my feet. And that's kind of how I did my job. So when you look at our members, we're back to kind of that old school journalism, living and serving the communities. There's a real unfair advantage to being a legacy news publisher, is that you do have access to to various schemes and funding pots of money that you don't have if you are an independent. So we've been very, very fortunate in Wales. There was a contestable fund. There was £200,000 of money that was invested in the independent sector in Wales a couple of years ago. It was due to be £100,000 to be spent per year over 2 years. And then the Welsh Government took a little bit longer to make their mind up on how the fund was going to work. So they took a year to decide, and then it was £200,000 for the last year. So our members in Wales did what they should do. They weren't greedy. They kind of applied for the pots of money in a way that they knew that there was manageable, deliverable, that they could deliver on what they were promising they could. And that meant that they were on target. They'd spent roughly £100,000 of that pot within a year, which meant there was about £100,000 left over. So we then lobbied Welsh Government and said, look, this money's there. And if anybody can come up with an idea, implement it and deliver it in 3 weeks, they can access that money. So why don't we repurpose that pot of money and issue it as a grant to help the independent press to kind of weather the storm of lockdown and COVID. So we were very, very fortunate in Wales that Welsh Government did that. So there was a grant to the tune of £8,500 that was given to independent press in Wales. And you know, I do believe that's more than fair, given that they were unable to access any of the funding. So of all the money that any government gave across the UK, 95% of ICNN members were not eligible to access one single penny of that money. So, you know, there's rate relief if you've got, you know, if you, depending on what level of business rate you pay, depending on the size of the grant you got, it started at £10,000. Well, if you're small independent, you're either working from home, you're working from a cooperative space, or you have a room in a local charities building. So they weren't eligible for that. They couldn't really go for the furlough scheme because your team is too small. You haven't got anybody else to carry out your news publication. And everybody kind of saw, you know, I have to put myself in there included. We kind of said that the independent sector is very precarious. They're the ones that are, you know, the ones are likely to kind of sink or first. And actually, we've seen the opposite. We've seen, if you look at Wales, you've seen the larger organisations, Reach and NewsQuest, have cut quite a high number of editorial roles. They're now centralising content. With Reach, the news control, you know, it has been handed from Wales now over to, everything's been centralized, it's coming from Birmingham. And what we've seen in the independent sector is, out of 128 members, only one title is closed and they're about to reopen, and they cited lack of government intervention and financial support as the reason they closed their doors. Because what we found is that when you are that closely embedded in your community, you're either going to sit at home and not have any money and do nothing and twiddle your thumbs, or you're going to sit at home without having any money and continue to serve the community with the new service that they should have. And nobody should be working for, you know, in journalism for free, particularly when those communities need that news and information. So, you know, prime example of this is one of our members, Caerphilly Observer. So Richard Gurn is the owner editor of the Caerphilly Observer. So Caerphilly County Borough were the first ones in Wales to go into a local lockdown, and Richard is the sort of, the Caerphilly Observer is the only news publication that covers the entire county borough of Caerphilly. So that's in the region of, off the top of my head, I do believe, it's, somebody may correct me in the chat, but I believe it's about 185,000 people. So the access and the availability and just the presence of the Caerphilly Observer has never been more important to the people that lived in Caerphilly, because you had somebody who was telling them exactly what they needed to know, what the new rules, what the new regulations, what the lockdown meant for them, their businesses, their families, their children's education, their health, their mental health, their well-being. Everything was centered on how does this affect me? And if the Caerphilly Observer didn't exist, then I really don't want to think about what that would have, you know, what the implications of that for the people of Caerphilly. So what it's really stressed and highlighted to me is the importance that we now continue with the work that we've been doing to build really strong foundations, so that we have foundations to build on existing independent press that we have, but also that we have good foundations for newcomers to come in and to start up as well. And I stress this, I don't want anybody to misconstrue what I'm saying. I'm not saying that Reach or NewsQuest are going to withdraw from Wales. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is, imagine if they did. We're already seeing, you know, job cuts, centralization of content, you know, key editorial and editor-in-chief jobs are kind of no longer for Wales there. You know, just imagine if one organization decided this does not, this is not feasible anymore, and they withdraw. Can you imagine what that means for democracy and life in Wales if we lose, you know, just overnight, some of the biggest titles go? So we have to make sure that alongside nurturing our big traditional legacy press, it's not an us and them, we're all in this together. I've never said, you know, don't give to the big players, give to us, and don't give to the... It's about looking at an ecosystem. We are all part of a news ecosystem, and everybody has a role to play in that ecosystem. And at the moment, the bigger fish get the best feeding and the best support. And it's important that unless we feed the smaller independent titles and build on that foundation, then we could end up in a really, really catastrophic situation in a few years' time.
Emma, thank you. Again, loads of strands that we will pull out for the conversation a bit further on in terms of capacity, centralisation of content, and the specificity as well of the patch that people are covering and what that means to them. I want to pick up and come back to you, Geraint, on, you know, earlier in the week, we talked about the need to shift our collective language from public service broadcasting to public service media, because the landscape has changed so dramatically. And I know we'll be taking a deep dive into S4C's thinking about this next week, but could you just give us a headline, please, in terms of how S4C is thinking about its future opportunities in a digital age? Because people, and you've alluded to this already, consume their news so differently. You know, I'm in that 39 to 55 bracket, but we've also got new voters coming on stream, haven't we, in the Senate elections this time around, 16 and 17 year olds who can vote for the first time. You know, how we reach them on the platform that they are using is increasingly important too.
Yes, of course, yeah. And I think our view is that you have to put the viewer or the reader, whichever it may be, first. You have to go where they're going. There's no point us mourning that people aren't watching TV anymore, not reading newspapers. If people are consuming it digitally, well, you've got to get your content out there, which is where we're heading. It's about developing a digital news service for us, which is fit for the 2020s, which meets the needs of an increasing number of viewers, and not just young people, as you alluded to there. There's a huge gap, as I mentioned earlier, in the market there for digitally literate people who are increasingly not getting their content through traditional means. So the move to S4C digital news for us is not just to make young people's news, it's to meet the needs of people, say, from 25 to 65 or even older, who have changed their means of consumption. And we know, because we all do it ourselves, and it's meeting the needs of that market. So for us, what we're aiming to establish is a digital news service which will become a curator of news as well. So it's not just going to be the current newyddion S4C, which is made by the BBC in digital form. We're investing in a team which will be creating news in-house digitally at S4C, but we're working with the BBC and the content they already provide for us. We're working with ITV, who already produce current affairs for us. And we're also, actually announcing this today, really, that we're working now in partnership with Golwg and the Golwg Triwch Dim news website, so that we in some ways can give that content a wider audience. And the same is true for our TV content. You know, it's funded by the license fee. It goes out on S4C, maybe not quite consumed by younger audiences, but by creating a digital news service, we're able to make that license fee funding go further. Or in the case of the Golwg 360 content, which is consumed by a certain audience at the moment, if we can expand the reach of that, then in some ways it makes the Welsh Government, Welsh Books Council investment in that go further as well. So it's a service that will be there to bring in a lot of Welsh language content, which is news content, but to put it together in one digital news service, which will be an app, which will provide notifications, which will be a website, and which will mean that we continue to publish content on social media. So it's a big investment for S4C in journalism, but it's the move that S4C are making generally now in terms of our content. It can't just be for the linear TV channel. We have to shift that funding from just linear TV to digital for television content, that is for content like Hansh, which people will be aware of. It's young people's content, which is lighter in tone, which has made a lot of noise over the past couple of years, but now also for news. So it's expanding what we do and making S4C fit for the 2020s and beyond.
Okay, thank you. Sian, can I come back to you in terms of, you know, Golwg's been providing news in Welsh online for over a decade. You know, there are obviously challenges, both challenges and opportunities in terms of social media and the just explosion of social media that we've seen over the last few years. And we know that misinformation travels six times faster than information, you know, facts, correct facts. Facts are correct, aren't they, by their very nature. Can you tell us a bit more about what you think those challenges and opportunities are for you at the moment, bearing in mind the situation which we find ourselves right now?
Yeah, well, like Derek was saying, it's exciting for us to go into partnership with S4C, getting a greater audience to our news on whatever platform or website that is going to be positive for us. And I think it's taking advantage of the new platforms that we need to ensure that our content are on as many different platforms as possible and that people are getting our news. Golwg Sin Chwechdeg is funded, like Geraint was saying, through the Welsh Books Council. And it's about making that investment go further, and it's working in partnerships with S4C that is ensuring that funding goes as far as possible. And it's the fact that Golwg is able to, as a company, is able to share admin staff with Golwg, the print magazine and our other magazines, that it also helps us be good value for money. Because to be honest, although £200,000 a year sounds like a lot of money, it was £200,000 a year in 2009 when Golwg Sin Chwechdeg launched. It is still £200,000 a year in 2021. It has never increased. And that is to build and maintain a news website when people expect so much from news websites. It's to pay for journalist salaries, it's to pay for their equipment. In normal times, it's to pay for the offices. So £200,000 a year disappears very quickly. So I think in terms of, I think conversation that we're going to have in terms of funding news, there needs to be quite an honest conversation around how much news costs. News is very expensive. And actually, since 2009 and now, the development of social media and the development as well of video and how people get their video news on their phones, it's just not something that we're able to keep up with on £200,000 a year. And that's how our only option is to partner with S4C, who are creating videos. That's the only way that we're able to have any video content on our website. Yeah, so in sort of looking at the future, I think we do need to have a conversation around what is expected of people who are funded to create news and what actually it costs to produce that news and to produce it well as well. So we don't want to press any corners. We want to be able to pay our journalists to do a good job.
So there's some key issues there, I think, in terms of what other sort of creative partnerships could be on the cards within the sector more broadly. But let's follow up this issue of funding, because we all know that it's crucial to whatever happens next. I talked in my introduction about the fact that our media audit knows we need to do, we're setting out that we need to do more. So we're proposing that Welsh Government should create a contestable fund for news in Wales. And this could be anything. Could fund anything from a micro local blog to dedicated reporters covering Senate business to syndicated news content that could, being ambitious, replace bulletins made in Wales that run on commercial radio stations, made in England that run on commercial radio stations made in Wales. So one of the things that we're trying to do through this and subsequent conversations is create a consensus that this is a legitimate role for a devolved government. And surely a stronger media is in the interest of all parties in the Senate. But we want to work in partnership with others to develop this in detail. So we've got real traction on it. So Ivan, I'm going to come to you first on this. And then Sian, I want to come back and explore some of the stuff around quality and Emma as well. So Golwg360 and Nation.com are are both new sites which have received Welsh Government funding. We've talked about that today. So arguably the principle has already been established that Welsh Government can support news. So what do you think that future fund for local and or national news could look like? What would good look like? Ivan?
I think in terms of, I definitely agree that the government does have a role in terms of funding local news, because I think it's news is completely essential to the functioning of democracy, and the public sphere is completely essential to the functioning of democracy. It's as, you know, it's as essential as, you know, a bin service in my mind, or a you know, water pipes. And I think that if the, you know, while the market is working in bringing people a good quality news, that's fine. But obviously in Wales, the market for news journalism is, I think, failing at the moment, with the mostly with the demise of print media and the failure to replace that with a profitable model that can fund journalism to the same extent and breadth. And we've seen a hollowing out, as others have said, of newsrooms around the country. What I'd like to see is, the one thing I don't want to see, I don't think, is the Welsh Government putting funding into just creating a new service and saying, well, we've got a new service here, that's pluralism, because I think there is such a thing as fake pluralism, where you create a large number of news sites and they all have a small number of journalists working on them, and as a result they're all stuck in this kind of loop of churning out the kind of the same press releases, and they don't have the resources for journalists to leave their desks and do investigative work. So really what I'd like to see is obviously something that is arm's length from the government, where they put the money in. However, you know, the more money really they can spare, the better. Although, as Sian was saying, £200,000 doesn't go particularly far. I think it would probably have to be a somewhat larger sum than that. And
how much are you thinking? What would a good sum be? What would a good amount be?
Oh gosh. Well, I was saying that the more money goes in, the better, really. So it's I don't think there's really a set sum where you think, but you know, I think ideally you'd be looking at something approaching £1 million just to make it worthwhile, really, I think. In doing this, and my thoughts really are, rather than, as I said, investing in a kind of new service, because if you invest in a new service, half the costs are gone before you know it, on a website, on a building, on those kind of administrative overhead costs. And what I'd like to see really is something approaching the very impressive local democracy service that the BBC have set up, where that money goes directly into journalism and journalists covering certain patches, local news, covering courts, covering justice, embedded in different communities in Wales, different ethnic communities, different geographical communities, but also national news as well, embedded in the Senedd, in Senedd committees. And this wouldn't be just people kind of churning out kind of press release copy like we get from the Senedd at the moment, with no real kind of news values about what should be news and what shouldn't be news, but actual journalists with news values working independently, making their own decisions regarding what is newsworthy and what isn't, and then syndicating that information, that content throughout the different news services that we have here in Wales. I really feel that we don't have any lack of titles here in Wales. It's a kind of fake pluralism where we have a lot of titles, but very few journalists working for each one. And as a result, they all have the same problem in terms of actually having the capacity to create investigative, in-depth news. So I think we don't need a new news service. We need more journalists out there providing kind of syndicated copy for the news sites that exist already. I think, you know, if the Welsh Government, I think considering the challenges that devolution faces in Wales now, in terms of to an extent an existential threat. You know, there are people out there now that would rather devolution doesn't exist, and they are flooding the online services with disinformation about devolution as well. It's in the Welsh Government and the Senate interest, I think, to have a good quality news information out there. And I think, you know, in the context of a budget of a 15 billion, I think £1 million spent on that a year would be a very good investment on their part, I think.
Thank you. So we've got a benchmark. We've got an opening bid for a million. Thank you very much, Ivan, for that. I wanted to just flag that IWA members who came to our AGM would have, I hope, enjoyed a conversation that I had with Professor Martin Innes of Cardiff University, looking at misinformation online and a discussion around free and fair elections and whether that's possible in Wales. And I flagged on Monday that we shouldn't assume that that's possible in Wales too. You know, democracy needs fighting for every day, all of us every day. So it's just a reminder to us all, please. Sian, can I come back to you and just explore this point about quality? And then Emma, I'm going to come to you next. So one of the things about an arm's length body is, and how do you then fund outcomes? It's not just the number of articles and that sort of that online, the quantity of the output. What then does the quality of outcome, how do you measure that? What's your thought on that?
I think from what Ivan was saying, the gap that what we find frustrating is the ability to do the investigative journalism, and the ability to spend time on a story. We're often compared to Cymru Fyw because they're another Welsh language news website. But if you compared how many members of staff work on Cymru Fyw on a daily basis to how many members of staff work on Golwg Trwy Chwechdim on any given day, there's no comparison. So there's no slack in our system to be able to keep up with the rolling news and in this time the daily changing news, and also be able to follow a story, an investigative story, for weeks, and be able to do justice to those stories. That's where what we find frustrating, and it's something that we'd like to be able to do, but the capacity isn't there. And I think we need to measure the impact of our stories as well, not in terms of numbers and the number of stories, but we need to measure the impact. And I think it's in that investigative, at a local level, in courts, as Ivan was saying, it's at that level where you're really able to make an impact. But again, it just comes back to money again and paying journalists' salaries. Journalists deserve to be paid well. They need training. That's where the gap is. And I think that's where the investment needs to be.
Thank you. The thing about impact, I think, is particularly pertinent as we're talking. I know we're talking about the future, but at the moment we're in the middle of a global health emergency, a public health emergency, and the impact is on people's lives. There's a very clear bottom line on why this matters. So in it being clear about what rules are there, how that affects you, can literally be a matter of life or death for all of us. So I think that's something for now, which won't last forever, but is for now. Emma, can I come back to you? I mean, do you agree with Ivan about, you know, funding new channels isn't the solution? Let's stick with established providers. Should a thousand flowers bloom, or do we want to nurture what's already there? And if so, who else needs to be brought into this conversation too? Because again, One of the things is around how news providers reflect the communities in which they are embedded too.
I absolutely agree that I was nodding furiously like one of those Churchill dogs going, yes, 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 with Ivan was saying, you know, we do need to invest in journalism. And I was furiously trying to think of a better analogy. And I know that that there was once a politician that used a similar analogy. And I know I'm going to regret saying it, but I'm going to say it anyway. If you think of it like a sausage machine, everybody looks at the product that comes out the one end and thinks about, you know, well, how do we get our paper out there? And how do we get audiences and click on it? And, you know, And if we need to go back to basis and think about what's the quality of the meat that goes into the sausage machine. And unless you put good quality stories, journalism, time, effort, energy into a story, a product, the product will take care of itself. If you have got good quality content going into a sausage machine, you're going to have better sausages coming out the other side. I do apologize for not being able to think of anything better than a sausage machine. However, I hope you all get the gist of what I'm trying to say, is that we have to start going back to focusing on the quality. And it's not just about numbers and clicks, and, you know, impact can come in a whole host of different ways, you know. And if Brexit has taught us anything, we need to be thinking about getting back messaging back about local communities. What, you know, how does this impact me? How does it impact my child's education? How does it impact my aging parents? How does it impact my next door neighbors? How does it impact the tax I pay? How does it impact the car, the roads I drive my car on? That's what people need to know about, and that's what we need to be providing. And then everything else feeds into this big, you know, coming back to this news ecosystem again. So there's lots of things that can be done. I absolutely wholeheartedly agree with the contestable funding. You know, it could address or fill in deficits in existing public interest news, as Ivan was saying. You know, I mean, there should have been far more tears and a much louder noise the last day that the reporter left the Senedd. We went from a room full of reporters in the Senedd to now having nobody there at all. You know, experimentation with the plurality of funding and delivery models of platforms. So a little bit of, you know, well, how do we get this? How do we weave this network together? You know, encouraging, facilitating community and citizen participation in media production, encouraging media-based community action, using new technology to innovate in the production and dissemination of local news. And once you start putting it into a big melting pot together, then we start to have the basis of something really exciting. And in Wales, we're really, really fortunate with our size and scale and devolution that we can be, you know, real leaders here that other people across the world can be looking at. We can be for, you know, charging ahead, and others can be looking at us and seeing, yeah, do you know what, they've done a really good job there.
Emma, can I just come back, and you talk about innovation as well. So do you think that fund should have a chunk of it should be a challenge fund to enable people to think about innovative solutions to things, not just fund what we're already doing, but let's find new ways of doing it?
Yeah, I mean, if you'd have asked anybody years ago what do they want, they'd have said faster horses. They wouldn't have thought of cars. And sometimes we're still thinking about advertising. How do we realise that the advertising business model that we've got for small independent press, when you hit the pandemic and all those local businesses stop trading, your income stops, but the value and importance on local news has grown. There's been more demand, more importance, more acceptance, and more gratitude for the existence of that news provision. So we do need to start thinking about how else do we go about this, because if we keep going down the local advertising route, I just fear that we're just going to keep going round and round in a circle. So I think there does need to be some element of how do we do this, but also by working together. One thing that we're looking at, we've built a tech platform. So at Cardiff University, we've partnered with Omni Digital in Bristol, which is an independent tech company, and the University of Central Lancashire. And we are just going into beta testing now on a platform which is called Ping, which is going to be the UK's first kind of hyperlocal or independent kind of community news agency. So we know at the moment that we have got a network effectively of patch reporters across the UK. And it's important, I must stress, that if you think of us, you know, it's revisiting how we look at things. So we think of small independent news titles as just being solitary, just for their kind of town, village, postcode. Some cover entire counties and some cover entire cities. But we as an organisation are there to provide a voice, and we bring our members together. So if you start thinking of us as a cooperative, all of a sudden the perspective is very different. We are equivalent to the fourth largest news publisher in the UK. So you've got Reach, NewsQuest, JPI, and then you have us before you come down to the others. So again, there's power in numbers. So as Ivan was saying, if you get this network of people working together collaboratively. So what this platform will be doing is allowing our members, when they're publishing stories to their website, to then send them through to us, to a central repository. We then push that out so anybody can subscribe, and you're effectively getting the equivalent of a local democracy reporter feed, but of very local, you know, good quality, trusted, reputable news from across the UK. And then we can start looking at how do you go back. So particularly now with COVID, there's restrictions on travel. So if anybody then wants to go back to the report and say, how, what's your fee for an extra two quotes and three pictures to go with that story? Should that journalist accept it? It's revenue stream. So we're now trying to look at capacity building and building strength and new revenue streams, because at the moment the existing system is broken. And for independent news, and I completely agree with Sian that news is expensive and you should pay for it, but it depends on what scale you do it. So on average, we did a survey of all our members across the UK near the start of COVID, to try start of the first lockdown, to try and work out, you know, funding, what do we need? And the average cost that came back was £2,250 a month to keep that entire news publication going. So that's staffing, that's, you know, sometimes print costs. So we're not talking huge sums of money when you are looking at local independent press. So I think, again, when you look at scales, bigger offices, more staff, obviously going to cost more money. But that's why we agree with the NUJ's campaign they've had running for a couple of years, that should a large organisation want to close a regional or local title, then that should first be given up as an offer for it to be taken on as a community asset, because we know for a fact that once you don't have 20% off to cream off the profits to line shareholders' pockets, and you bring it back down to basics of paying for some really good quality journalists who are able to work from home, who are able to go and cover their courts and council meetings, then actually the costs can come down considerably. So, you know, I think we absolutely do need to be working together. We need to be looking as a complete news ecosystem. How do we all work together? And I just think that's really exciting for us to look at. I think what's really important, though, is that, you know, that we, depending on what the fund is for, is looking at who implements it and what that money can be spent on. So with the fund that I mentioned earlier, the £200,000 for independent journalists, that was disseminated via Business Wales. So then it was dispersed more like a business grant. And because of how they'd always done it, it meant that there was no availability for capital expenditure. So if you're a small independent title and you're working on a very old laptop and you've now got, you know, trebled your web server, you need to, you know, there's no good investing money in the project if you don't have the hardware that can cope with, you know, the software that they're willing to pay for example. So just thinking about, you know, who will disseminate the money. It has to be at arm's length, but it could be for seed corn funding, you know, journalists covering new or underserved public interest beats from local and regional angles, as well as freelancers, just looking and picking up on what Yvonne was saying. If we look at the Local Democracy Reporter Scheme and having this network of independent, of just journalists all working together. But we do need to make sure that we do keep plurality of voice. That's the one thing that I will never, ever tire of banging on about, is that plurality of voice is really important, but not in the way that, you know, as Yvonne was saying, it's not just about one organisation with lots of different people. It has to truly be
different things. Thanks very much, Emma. Thanks very much indeed. I'm going to come back to you all very quickly with one question in a tick. I wanted to, before we open up to Q&A, and I know we've got lots of questions already, I wanted just to reflect briefly on a very powerful article that our colleague Dylan Moore, editor of the Welsh Agenda, wrote for our online site this morning, which reflects on the coverage of the tragic death of Mohammed Hassan after being in police custody, and questions whether South Wales's police statement on the incident was simply amplified without sufficient scrutiny. Obviously, and I want to really underline this, we cannot prejudge what happened in this case, and it's absolutely right that the Independent Office for Police Conduct will be investigating. But importantly, and in the context of Black Lives Matter, Dylan's piece is a very stark reminder to us all that conversations about the media in Wales, they're not all about whether the Welsh Government, Senedd and democracy, but also about how we hold power to account, wherever that power is held and exercised. And I'm sure all the panellists will agree with me on that. So Dylan asked a really provocative and an important question, I think, which is also, is there a justice deficit caused by a weak media? Because quite simply, for some people, a weak media, one which allows injustice, can be a matter of life and death. So I want to ask you all, please, how can you, the organisations you work for, or we support individual journalists to hold power to account? Is it about resourcing? Is it about somebody having your back? Does the solution lie in increasing the diversity of who writes those articles? And I know that Shirish Kulkarni has raised that in the chat just now. Geraint, can I come to you, please, first?
Yes, certainly. I mean, this does tie in with this point about investigative reporting, because I think that investigative journalism is something that journalism is expensive. Investigative journalism can be very expensive because it takes time and it takes experience and it takes skills. And I think that's the one thing that I'm really worried about with the way that things are heading in Wales, is that it's at a time when we need scrutiny more than ever. We're in a much weaker position than we've been in over the years. I mean, I was brought up in an investigative journalist background with ITV Wales, when we would be competing against other established investigative journalists at Week In, Week Out, at Wales This Week, and ourselves on Abida Bedwar. And it was great, healthy competition. The competition was what drove people on. And we'd experienced journalists who really, you know, were delving into matters at several different outlets. Now we're in a situation where the BBC have ditched Week In, Week Out, and now BBC Wales Investigate. So the regularity of investigative journalism has declined. At S4C, we still invest in it, in Abida Bedwar. And, you know, we see witness to that sometimes, such as the recent programme, which won an RTS Wales Award last year, looking at the investigation into child sex abuse at Caldy Island. Another one by the A&B team the previous year, an investigation into sex for rent. But these are few and far between now. You know, we're losing these skills rapidly. And it comes down to that ecosystem that Emma mentioned, because if we don't have the local journalists, because they are initially a source of stories, yes, but they are the journalists who will end up doing these big investigations in the end. If they don't get in at that stage, we'll never have them. Turning to this story, I understand completely the point of the IWA article. I think there's an element of on-the-day reporting here, which can be tame because people are worried about what they're able to report about a specific story at a certain time. There's an element of lack of knowledge as to what exactly went on with this story. It's slightly different to the BLM story in the States, and that there was video evidence there. And we do have this police statement, which, you know, journalists should be naturally sceptical of. I think that's healthy. What I think I've learned in the past from these kinds of stories is that they take a lot of time to get to the bottom of. So initial news reporting may appear tame, but it's because it's all you can report legally. But we did an investigation several years ago in Abida Bedwar into another death in police custody, not saying that this was one, but there was an investigation into a death in police custody in West Wales, which happened in January 2015. The inquest didn't return its verdict until January 2019, which just shows, I think, sometimes how complex, yes, these things can be, but how much time they can take for us to get to the bottom of a story. So absolutely, there's a duty here now to follow this story, to get to the bottom of what happened, to stay with it and not let it go quiet, because it will disappear for a while now. But the concern I'd have with these kinds of stories sometimes, that there is an element of when justice is delayed, that justice can be denied. And there's a danger that this kind of story will just disappear for a long time now. Not saying that we know what it is yet, but I think it should be reported as it is at the moment, robustly where possible, but we can't prejudge, as you said, Oriel, what exactly has happened here. But it's one that certainly should be investigated.
Thanks, Geraint. Ivan, I can see you nodding away. Would you like to add anything? I'm conscious of time, and I do want to get to Q&A from delegates today.
I would just concur completely with Geraint. I think the issue around investigative journalism is that it does take a lot of time. And I think the story broke on social media about 12 o'clock. And a lot of the news reports that appeared subsequently in the next few hours were just the immediate reaction based on what the information that was available at the time. Just making the public aware of that information. And I think if there is a failure around this story, I think it's a failure that, as Geraint says, will play out over the next weeks and months, because that's the point at which journalists will have the time to look in more depth and delve into this story. But as I was saying, the need there to have journalists embedded in different communities in Wales in Wales as well, in ethnic communities in Wales, in order to tell their story, is an extremely important one, and it's something we don't have at the moment.
Thank you. Emma, can I just broaden it to sort of holding power to account and also ask about your members in Wales and how diverse they are as well?
With our members in Wales, in terms of the editorial structure, not hugely diverse, but the communities they serve can be diverse. So we've got one that covers Splott, and we've got Grangetown. So communities within larger areas, obviously, you know, communities like Grangetown, incredibly diverse. And I think it's really important that we, you know, that we do have a really good diverse mix of, you know, and I'm very aware that, you know, as a white woman saying this, you know, and we do need to work harder and do better, basically. And it comes down to education, it comes down to training, it comes down to understanding. And what we did see post-Brexit in Wales was some of the national titles changed their policy. You know, The Guardian and The Mirror were looking at changing their policy to step away from parachute journalism. So, because what tends to happen is that they will send, particularly a national title, will send a journalist into a community because they have a preconceived idea of that community. So the community I'm thinking of at the moment is the Gurnos in Merthyr. I know that their reporting on Brexit from Merthyr was really shocking from the perspective of locals, and I've done a lot of work in that area as well. So it's going back to basics, and I've set up a pilot program with two primary schools in the Gurnos in Merthyr, and children who wanted to come to the after school club had to bring a parent or guardian with them. So every week I went back and forth and ran an after school sort of journalism club, a making news program, and it started with what is news, what's the difference between news and a story, and then we start investigating, you know, and going into and talking of investigations. I was an investigative journalist for a best part of a decade, so you know it's got a piece of my heart, but it does take time. So what we can do is we can start getting children young and making it fun for them and get them to understand, you know, that, you know, the importance of not just because you read it on Facebook doesn't mean it's true. You know, single source, if only one person has said it, well, who else is saying it? You know, have they got a vested interest in saying it that way? So we've devised a program along with NEU Cymru. So it's called the Making News Toolkit for Schools. It's completely bilingual. It's in Welsh and in English. And we currently have two documents. Basically, it's a 10-week programme. And we started rolling it out pre-COVID as a train-the-trainer programme, where we would get teachers into, have 2 days training, and we would give them all the resources, which parents can print off at home now, teachers can print off, and work their way through. And it works at every key stage level, from primary right up to secondary. And it teaches really, and the aim of it is that we start to encourage, you know, engaged citizens of the future. And I think that's really, really important.
That critical view on things. I'm just going to move us on. I'm sorry, Emma. Would you be able to share that link, please, with us at the IWA, and then we can share it with everybody afterwards, if that's okay. I'm going to come to you, Sian, with a slightly different question, because both Emily Hoare and Richard Martin in the chat have highlighted a challenge that comes from having distinct news sources in English and in Welsh, obviously, as this leaves people unaware of what's available and misses the opportunity to get content to everyone. So Emily notes that websites are able to allow users to choose languages with the same content, while Richard has asked whether S4C can be doing more of this. So Geraint, that's a question for you. But do we need more truly bilingual news? That's the question.
I think there's a danger in that. So I think in some sectors we've seen then Welsh be squeezed out. And I think we need to make sure that there is a place for Welsh language news in its integrity. I think it's an interesting question. I think it's something that we should look at. We also produce a current affairs magazine for Welsh learners with simple Welsh, and it is something that we're always discussing whether there's an element of that we should put on our website of simple Welsh news stories in simple Welsh that learners can follow. And I think that there is an element of that. I would be weary of it becoming a translation, because I think there is a way of dehongli interpreting Exactly. I think we need to be careful of that. But it's definitely something that is interesting that we should definitely look at. We do in print with our print magazine, and it's something that maybe we should look at on the website. But I would say I think it's important to make sure that the Welsh language is not squeezed out of this sector.
Okay, and I take your point. I'm a Welsh learner. I speak other languages too, but I take your point about interpretation, and it's not a transliteration project, is it? I've got a question for everybody in the chat, actually, first. Shirish Kulkarni in the chat's offered a reflection on the jump in demand for news during the pandemic and wonders whether this represented an emergency call for information. While Peter Evans has also highlighted the relevance of this particular questions for Welsh citizens living close to the long border with England. And there's also been discussion in the chat, obviously, and on the panel today about the importance of the Caerphilly Observer in particular about getting information out about restrictions in the county. So I guess my question is to everybody in the chat, how well do you think journalists have responded to this call for information? Did citizens get the information that they needed? And what's still lacking, if anything? So while I give everybody in the chat time to respond to that, I want to come back to the conversation about quality and how that impacts on demand, please. So David Nicholson has argued that Nation.Cymru and the Caerphilly Observer show that there's an appetite for Welsh news if it's provided through quality journalism. But Alex Swift and others note that the news economy incentivizes creating content rather than investing time, money and resources. How can publishers provide that quality in a difficult commercial environment? So Ivan, could I come to you with that, please?
Yes, I think it's creating high quality content comes down to resources. I think there's another issue we haven't really discussed, and one problem with investigative journalism and high quality content is that very often as a journalist you will invest a large amount of time in a news story and no one will read it. And very often you'll publish a story that is essentially almost clickbait, and it'll get sort of 30, 40,000 views, and you've spent literally about 30 seconds putting it together. So there's an issue beyond sort of money and time as well, which is that it's almost, if you're working from a commercial point of view, there is an extent, I think, to which the public almost, although they tell you that they hate clickbait journalism and they prefer investigative journalism, that's not always reflected in the numbers of readers for different kinds of articles. And I would say that we've definitely seen a Nation Cymru, although we regularly do articles that are very investigative, take a long time to do. Very often we'll see a poorer reaction to those stories than to stories that perhaps are designed to initiate a more kind of emotional reaction, perhaps, and which took a shorter time to write. I think that's a real issue from the point of view of journalists, where and then people will often say that there's only clickbait coming out of a news service. But that's to an extent because people will share and retweet and click on these articles. And so the Facebook and Twitter algorithm perhaps will drive them up and more people will see them. It's a kind of snowball rolling downhill. So I think that there is an issue. There is a issue of not enough money being in journalism to finance investigative journalism. But there's also an issue where if you're working from a commercial point of view, that investigative journalism isn't really financially rewarded either in terms of the people who actually sort of click on those articles and read them as well. You know, we've seen a great reaction in terms of articles about coronavirus because of the impact it has on people's lives. But we have tended to find that when we do launch investigative journalism stories that are in particular scrutinizing institutions and so forth, that people don't see as direct the link between them and those institutions and the people involved in them, there is a more muted reaction. So it's there's a problem of a lack of money in investigative journalism. There's also a problem of investigative journalism not paying off in the same way as more kind of commercial forms of journalism do as well.
Geraint, did you want to come in on that?
Yes, and I've been reading these comments, you know, about bilingual journalism and so on, and quality. And I take encouragement from that in some ways, because I think there's an acknowledgement there that what is being offered in the Welsh language is of a quality that people want to consume. Because if you're looking for journalism which does hold politicians and institutions to account in Wales, you will get that on S4C. You know, with Bethan Rhys-Roberts and Roddy Llewellyn interviewing politicians on Newyddion on S4C, with Betsan Powys on Pa Bai Farn, and please tune in tomorrow night where the First Minister is appearing on Pa Bai Farn with Betsan, with Kit O'Hari on Abid Nile. These are top quality journalists who are holding people to account. You can watch that content with English language subtitles, I would add. Then there was the question from Richard you wanted me to address with regards to the digital news service and whether there'd be any English language content there. That is a possibility that we're considering, a small amount. We'd also be making it easy for anybody, because we're not just dealing with Welsh speaking or non-Welsh speaking, we're dealing with different abilities of Welsh speakers as well. So we will be making it easy to navigate that site in English for those users who are not confident in Welsh. We'll also build technical solutions in that offer users the choice of support with vocab and so on. It doesn't mean that it will be a bilingual site, even though, you know, happy to listen to the Welsh government if they feel that this model we're creating of plurality within news on one platform in Wales, bringing together the best of what's out there, should be something that should be available to English language speakers, non-Welsh speakers, that is, as well, then more than prepared to listen to that too.
Okay, thanks very much. I'm very conscious of time. I want to just bring up the issue of trust. And Emma, I'm going to come to you, please. Hannah Watkin has raised the issue of trust, particularly in relation to the issue of quality. So where a lack of trust in professional news outlets has fueled the spread of fake news. Do you think there are sufficient strategies in place for tackling this problem in Wales?
Well, I think by us having ICNN and having our network, that is the first step, because we know, and there's lots of academic papers being written on it and everything, looking at trust in news, and we know that trust is that news is more trusted and more valued at a very local level, because the just journey of a news story is far shorter. So you generally know the person that's written the story, or will know somebody that knows somebody, and you're that much closer to the story, and you're still in the community anyway. So I think getting reporters back on the ground, embedded back in communities, is key to getting trust back in journalism. Having independence as well, so that you don't have any bias. So to be a member of ICNN, you have to be free from any bias, be that political, religious or other. And if you are biased, then if you do show bias, then you can't be a member of ICNN. So that is one way to start tackling. So the more we grow our membership, and I'm not doing a hard sell here, it's completely free to be a member of ICNN. We don't make a penny, it costs us money. The more members we have, the more we pay. So we invest in things like, so David Banks is a reputable media lawyer who was a journalist himself before, and he's written one of the previous versions of the McNays handbook for a law for journalists. So we pay him an annual fee, and any one of our members that has any legal issues. So when I worked in the BBC, before I went to publish anything, I could run it by editorial policy team, I could run it by the legal team. They were there 24 hours a day. So we offer the closest that we can to that. We don't say if you ring David at 4 a.m, he'll answer. But you know, and that again comes down to it's not about what people can't say about stories, but it's about having faith and confidence and actually producing stronger stories and what you can legally say. It's not always about what you shouldn't put in a story, but having the confidence in what you can. And when you're an independent or a one-man band, then actually sometimes that can be quite nerve-wracking, because you know that it's your home, your livelihood, and you know. But also just coming back on what you were saying previously, and I know we're short of time, you know, but it comes down to resourcing, and it's down to where your focus is on resourcing. If your money goes on journalists and journalism, which when you were a small independent it does, then actually a small amount of money goes a very, very long way. And once you then get, you know, bigger organisations, and then that spend gets diluted because priorities change. Again, I think rather than tarring everybody with one brush, it's looking at the structure of the organisation, the size of the organisation, the funding. There's a lot more to it. There's a whole other...
Yep. Okay, thanks, Emma. Very, very quickly, Geraint, because I'm going to need to wrap up.
Yeah, there's this question of trust, but there's also this question of us in Wales receiving information from network broadcasters, which has actually been incorrect about COVID, that we haven't really got to grips with today. And a few years ago, there was a big campaign for a Scottish Six, And I haven't heard anybody mention this in the Welsh context at all, but I do wonder with COVID now and with the misreporting that's happened on Network News on several occasions with regards to different guidelines being in place in Wales with regards to health or education in connection with COVID, whether there should be this one Welsh news service for people at 6 o'clock, a Welsh news hour. That's what we do on Newyddion S4C. It's news about Wales, from Wales, international news and UK news, but all with a Welsh editor sitting in Cardiff leading that programme. It's whether there should be a similar thing in the English language, I think is a question that should be addressed.
Very good challenge at the end. Thank you very much indeed. I wanted to just reflect before I close, obviously, that Rob Thompson has responded about the question, are citizens getting the information they need, saying the coverage of Merthyr Tydfil was poor, but coverage in regional valleys and national and at a Wales level also, but he noted some examples of bias against Merthyr. Caris Thomas and others have paid tribute to the efforts of Lloyd Warburton, A-level student, in providing COVID data for Wales. We all pay tribute to Lloyd for that, so well done him. There are questions we haven't got to today, as ever, because there's always a challenge and we know that an hour and a half is a long time for people to concentrate online too. So thank you for your patience. Gethin Rees on funding has highlighted political challenges to the long-term future of the licence fee. How can we establish a news infrastructure in Wales which has survived the hollowing out of both BBC and S4C funding by the end of the decade? David Nicholson's asked about how does Golwg manage its news independence given the public funding it receives via the Books Council for Wales? So Sian, if you're willing to point David in the direction of information on that afterwards by follow-up, that'd be great. And there's also a question we haven't got to, which is what's the panel's view of the Cairncross review recommendation for the pilot innovation journalism fund run by Nesta, and whether it would work in Wales, as well as Margaret Minhinnick's question about what's your opinion on special correspondents like culture, environment, poverty, and so forth. This is a really, really, really big topic, and we know that we can't cover all of this. So I'm going to wind up now. It's a really genuine invitation to people who are interested in picking up some of the threads from the three sessions that we've held so far, as well as next week's session, to get in touch with us. We'll be putting all the presentations and the videos of these sessions on our website as soon as that last fourth session is over, and a week on Thursday. I'd like to say thanks very much indeed to all of our panelists today. Thank you to the University of South Wales for sponsoring our IWA media audit, and also to colleagues at S4C, BBC. I know somebody noted that they weren't represented on today's panel. They have been represented on at least one other panel this week. ITV, Cardiff University, Ofcom, Wales and Clwstwr for their contributions to these sessions too. I'd really like to thank everybody for attending. I do want to emphasise the beginning of the conversation, and we'll be, I know Andy's just shared in the link now a Dupol for more ideas, and we'll be having certainly one, possibly more follow-up roundtables picking through some of the threads of the things that you've raised also in the chat. So thank you for your contributions, but also the content of these conversations. So if you're interested in getting involved in that, do please leave your email addresses on the Dupol too. We know there are new voices and new people coming to these conversations fresh, and we want to hear what you have to say and what you think. We obviously need to do more, and we will be working on that, on what that more looks like for Wales's media over the next few months. There's still time to sign up for the last event in the series, our deep dive into S4C's vision for the future, which will be in Welsh, chaired by Gitter Harry. Very sadly, my Welsh isn't quite good enough to do that yet. Well, maybe one day it will be. Please just go to iwa.wales, follow the link on our events page. And again, just a reminder, if you'd also like to receive early notification of all IWA events, do please join us as a member. Like I said at the beginning, we are not a representative body for a sector, trade or interest. We are truly independent. We're very proud of our role convening important and detailed discussions across sectors in particular, and being some of that connective tissue between what this means over here and what it might mean over here. And we think there's never been a more urgent need for an independent body to do just that in Wales. I look forward to carrying on the conversation and improving my Welsh at next week's event and over the weeks and months to come. Thank you very much indeed, and diolch yn fawr.